Welcome to the Carrier's Edge podcast. I'm Jane Jazrawi, the CEO of Carrier's Edge. And with me, as always, is, even though we're not in our normal place.
Oh, that was my cue. Mark Morrell, not the CEO of Carrier's Edge. No. Yes. And you said the episode number? See, already I've forgotten what you said.
It's number 90. We are in episode number 90 of the Carrier's Edge podcast.
And we are not in our normal studio.
I think
we said at the last episode that we were doing the last episode in our old studio. And I promised then that the next episode would be from the road. And it is.
It is. We are on the road. We have left Newmarket, Ontario forever.
Yes.
And
where are we today? We're in Regina.
Today, we're in Regina, Saskatchewan. And it's pretty nice.
Yes. Well, it's a massive heat wave, so it's been sweltering all across the country.
It has been. It has been a really hot drive, but I think that Regina is much prettier than I thought it would be.
Yeah, I think the part of it that we're seeing is nicer than the parts that I've stayed in before, because it's very nice. It's a lovely little part of town. We're in the southern part, not too far off of the Trans-Canada Highway, and we are enjoying it so far. And I have to say, it has been a very interesting trip. It's been not too bad of a drive. And I know that I have nothing to complain about, because many of our audience do these drives on a regular basis. And us soft city folk are not used to doing 8 or 10 hour drives or anything longer than that for consecutive days. So I really don't have anything to complain about, but I have been enjoying it. And we have seen a lot of very different parts of the country already, haven't we?
Oh, yeah. And we've also seen tons of customers.
Yes.
Like we've seen their trucks. So it's been kind of cool to see where people are in, like, so, you know, various trucking companies have different operating areas. So, you know, you're driving through Toronto and you see a certain, you know, you see a bunch of companies that you know. But then as you get out of Toronto, then you start seeing, you know, you start seeing companies that you know their names, but you don't really see them on the road. And then those change as you move. And it's really kind of cool, because we saw some trucks sort of in northern Ontario, but as soon as we crossed into Manitoba, it kind of all changed.
And then you can really get a good sense of where they cluster, like where their operating areas are, because like you said, you know, there's certain companies that you're just seeing truck after truck after truck. And for instance, Northern Ontario, we're seeing a lot of J&R Hall.
Manitoulin.
Tons of Manitoulin trucks. Gardewine North, we had a lot of vehicles going through there. Few Herb a good amount of Day and Ross. And then we get from the top of Superior, we head across, and it was a whole different set. Then we were getting more McKevitt and more of the, then we started to see a lot more Bison trucks. And from Winnipeg across to Regina, where we are today, it was just endless.
LCVs.
Yeah. And endless Bison trucks.
And the speed limiters are gone.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a difference.
Speed limiters are not hard and fast on a truck, because suddenly when we hit the Manitoba border, people are not doing 105 anymore. They're doing 110 or 120. And obviously across the prairies here, there is no speed limit. The speed limit is whatever your truck will get up to when you have your foot to the floor.
They're mostly going, I think, around 120 here.
Yeah, we got LCVs going 120.
Yeah, well, there's nothing to hit.
I mean, true.
And what I really like is the changes in the signs, which I know that probably nobody cares about besides me. But, you know, well, we were pointing out the different images that are on, like, for deer and moose and that kind of stuff, because you don't see those in suburbia. You don't see them in the city. So the signs for, well, we see the signs for deer a lot around where we used to live. And so I was familiar with those. But then you start getting into, you know, up north or like around Sudbury, and those change. And then so we just called it the Crazy Moose, or I was calling it the Crazy Moose. So you've got the Crazy Moose, and then you also have the deer, and I saw a turtle sign once.
Yeah, we did see one turtle sign. We saw an actual turtle. Yes.
We did see an actual turtle in the middle of the road. I hope he made it. I don't know. I'm not sure. And then the signs, the animals on the signs actually change when you change provinces, because they all have their own signs.
That I find fantastic. And I know. I was it's not so expecting weird. That at all.
The buffalo in Saskatchewan, or no, sorry, not the buffalo. The moose in Saskatchewan is a much more regal sign than the moose in Ontario. The moose in Ontario looks like he's drunk.
And a little bit skinny. It's pretty, he's pretty slim. He hasn't eaten for a while. So yeah, it's like as the moose moves west, he eats more and gets more full. But the same thing with the deer. Like here, it is this light dancing deer. And elsewhere, it's been much more of a threatening deer.
Yes, yes, threatening deer. Absolutely.
Yeah, so, it is quite fascinating how different places do their watch out for animal signs.
Yeah, which I know that probably anybody who's a driver is like, yeah, I could have told you that.
Yes. So, yeah, we have been really enjoying that, learning a lot, I guess, from sort of watching. And certainly as we were going through Northern Ontario, where there's a lot of hills, I know you were taking a lot of footage of trucks going up the hills slowly with their flashers on and just taking it easy and getting pictures of how some of the cargo is secured or the way they've set up their equipment. So that's always interesting.
But also the scenery up there. Mm-hmm. Like I've been previous to this, I was up on the top of Lake Superior once. And I think that was in 1998, nine, maybe something like that, that I was up there and I went camping and at the provincial park up there. So I had been there, but not for ages and ages. And just the countryside up there is just beautiful, that the hills going up and down, and then you see the lake. And there's just so much water. So it is a really beautiful part of the country. And we were really lucky because when we were driving, nobody else was. Apparently, in about a week or so, it's going to be packed.
Yeah.
The Trans-Canada will be packed.
We did get lucky that it was quite empty. And another part of the journey for us, certainly through Northern Ontario, was me revisiting these places that I spent a lot of time in when I was on the road as a musician. And wanting to see if these places were still operating. And it's scary how many of them are still operating, but also scary just how run down and gross they are now. So there's several clubs in small towns that I stopped in that I used to play pretty regularly. And the ones that are operating are not very nice now.
Well, they don't have bands.
No.
But they also, we don't know exactly how run down they are. Or compared to when you were playing.
Yeah. Yeah. We don't know how much nicer they actually were when I was working there because, I was a musician on the road and, your standards for a high quality band room are very different at that stage. If you have an actual bed in a room with your own bathroom, that's luxury. Or that was considered luxury because a lot of places it was a bunch of beds in one room with a shared bathroom or something like that. So these places that were actual hotels, that was nice. You get your own room. Ooh, that's luxury.
Now you're a bit different now. Now you have higher standards.
Yeah, now I'm much more delicate. I'm not staying in those places. But also, it has been 30 years since I've been to these places. So
this is true.
Anything
it's
is
kind
going
of
to
funny
change.
That it's kind of funny that they're still there.
Yeah, it is
in whatever
funny.
State they're in,
but they
definitely
operating.
There's been a couple of places that were quite crazy, just sort of general store type of places that were just packed full of Ontario stuff, which I found kind of fascinating. I just kept thinking, like, how do you prevent shoplifting? Like, there's just so much stuff in all of these different rooms. Like, you go into the store and you know there's ice cream there, but you can't see the ice cream. You can't really figure it out. You basically just have to move your way through the sections until you see an opening, because it's just shirts and moccasins and boots and slippers and
mugs.
Weird chimes.
Yeah.
And mugs and mugs and mugs. And like just anything that you could think of wanting.
What I find funny about that, and you alluded to it a minute ago, is they all seem to have the same template of the stuff they have, which is all of this, touristy gift type stuff and ice cream. They all have an ice cream counter.
And ice cream.
And that's the only food, really. Well, they have like chips
and
stuff.
But there's lots of junk.
It's generally, road junk and ice cream. They all seem to, it seems to be a requirement to get a permit for these places that you must have ice cream as well.
So we had ice cream.
Yeah. And I guess the answer to the question about preventing shoplifting is these places are so densely packed and so densely stocked that even if you grab something and ran out, it takes you 5 minutes to find your way through the aisles to get back to the door. So they have ample time to stop you.
What was the one that had the big stuffed moose?
No, that was in Wawa.
In Wawa?
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first crazy store.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, there's been a few of them.
Yeah. So we've been kind of doing a little bit of touristy things.
And the question that keeps coming up from people about how is it driving an electric car across the country, it's actually been pretty nice.
It's been not a problem.
First, there are chargers every 150 kilometers or so. So there's really not a lot of, no range anxiety, no worry about finding anything like that.
Just on that, with the chargers, when you drive a gas-powered vehicle, you don't notice a Tesla charger. Because they're all situated. I don't know what happened, but Tesla got these things built. But they're all in the backs of mall parking lots or Canadian Tires. We found a couple of Canadian Tire. Or I think one was in a Petro-Can or a Tim Hortons.
Yeah, sometimes they're right by gas stations.
There's always a Tim Hortons.
Yeah, there's like, usually something there. There's almost always something else there so that while you're charging, you can go into a store. There's a couple that were in Shell stations, so you can go into a store, go to a bathroom, do all of that kind of stuff. So they are pretty nice. There's a lot of them around. And when you put in your destination for the day, the car figures out what chargers you need to go to and tells you how long you need to spend at each before continuing the trip. So it really takes a lot of the planning out of the trip. It's quite nice.
Tell the people what they want to know. How much have we spent?
Oh, it's been about $30 a day on charges. So, for a full day of driving, I don't consider that a lot, really.
And we have to charge usually twice a day.
Yeah.
Once before we start and then once on, sometimes twice on route.
Yeah. Depending on how far we're going and where we were at the beginning of the day, we may charge a few times. But sometimes the car will have us go in there and just charge for 5 minutes and then leave. It's very weird. And sometimes
tell you that, but that is only to get you to your next destination. Mm-hmm. That it's giving you the minimum, but we usually charge, we do a full charge because it's never taken long.
No.
You have to do, you get out of the car, you go find a bathroom, you look around some weird store, and then you go back to the car and it's done.
Yeah. It almost charges too fast because if you try and get into something else, you get a notice that it's done charging and you need to
going to get idle fees.
Yeah. If you don't move.
So the only relatively unpleasant charging experience was today in
Whitewood, Saskatchewan,
where it was a co-op gas station and it was also a diesel. So it was
a diesel fueling station.
Yeah. And there's this huge lot. It's huge. And you
unpaved.
Have. Yeah. Well,
no, part it, of was it was a gravel lot. Yeah.
And then there's where the diesel, if you like, for heavy trucks, like they were all on sort of one side, and then the actual regular fuel was on another side. There was the co-op building, because it's co-op out here, it's not Petro-Can very much. And then we're like, where is this? Where are the charges? We can't find them. Mm-hmm. And because there was some construction that was going on as well around this, so we went in the front of the co-op, and then people are staring at us. So people are generally do stare at us when we go to a charger, because in these small towns, like when you get outside the Toronto, the GTA, it's weird to see a Tesla. And it's weird to have, like at one point there was, well, that's a different story, but it's weird to see them. And I guess in this place here, they really weren't used to seeing them. So we drove in and we're looking for the thing. And these two guys are just staring at us in not a very nice way. So I was like, okay, that's not very good. So we go and realize that we're blocked by whatever construction they're doing. So we have to go back and we have to go past the guys who are staring. And then we have to go behind the diesel pumps. And then like at the very back. So as far away from civilization as you can possibly get and still have a Tesla charger, there they were. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, we are not welcome.
Yeah.
Just charge this car and get out of here.
But that was the only one that was in any way really unpleasant. And it was
it wasn't really even unpleasant.
Yeah, it wasn't even that bad.
because they had a washing thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we could wash the windows, which was good because, yes, we are just getting pounded by bugs. Yes.
Bugs. Yes. Maybe I'll get somebody to post a picture of what the front of our car looked like after we left Manitoba. Holy crap.
Yeah. And that was after going through the car wash.
No, that was after we went through Northern Ontario and we crossed the border into Manitoba. And it was when we got into Winnipeg and then we saw the state of our car.
Yeah.
It was nasty. Brutal.
Yeah.
And one car wash isn't doing it.
Oh, yeah. That was like even the premium car wash. It was not getting that stuff off. No. There was a bug genocide on the front of our car.
Which apparently is normal. Yeah. Again, us city folk are so sad mm-hmm. that, we don't know. We don't know of these things. Yeah. And apparently it's quite common. And you'd see everybody else's cars are chock full of bugs, too. Oh, dear.
Yeah. The things you learn by getting out of the
camp. It's an education.
It has been very enlightening for us. So let's shift gears and actually talk about some work stuff.
Oh, have we done some?
It's going to be hard for the brain a little bit.
Yes,
but,
okay.
Well, we maybe not doing so much, but work is still happening.
Yes.
So we can talk about that a little bit. And I think the first thing that I want to highlight is the milestone that happened on Friday when there was a photo shoot that you had nothing to do with.
I know. So weird and somewhat sad. So we were doing a photo shoot for a loading and unloading a car hauler, which is a third in our car hauler series. We have the cargo inspection, the vehicle inspection, and now we're doing loading and unloading. And I don't really think that I've had minimal involvement in this, which is really odd. So the team is really starting to get up to speed. And there was some scheduling issues. I wanted the photo shoot to be done before I actually left Ontario. And we were trying to do that, but it didn't happen. So we were on the road when four of the team went out. So Tiffany, our content lead, Rick, who wrote the course to begin with, and two photographers. So Berenice, who's the content photographer usually, and our new marketing coordinator, Martha, and she is also a photographer and she was helping out. So there were four of us at four of them. And I got them to post a picture, which was really good. It was nice to see. I'm pretty sure that it will all be fine. They know how to do a shot list. They know how to create the shot list. They know how to follow the shot list. They know how to just go take pictures of everything they could possibly find.
And also Berenice and Martha both take fantastic pictures. They're both mm-hmm. really talented photographers.
And Berenice has done this three or four times. She's done a few photo shoots with me. She knows how to take a picture of a truck. So we're good. So yeah, and it was really cool. It's cool that, things can get done without me actually doing them.
Yeah.
Which means we're kind of expanding and we're getting bigger. Yeah. And
that's really, really nice to see that series, of course, is finally get finished because it's been in progress for a while. And a
couple of years.
Yeah. Part of the challenge has been that the car hauler customers that we need to work with to do photo shoots and have them kind of review some of the content, they've been super busy because it's been a crazy time for them. So mm-hmm. getting to do photo shoots has been challenging. So it's nice to get that finally finished and out there and have that full set of courses available. And I'm really looking forward to that. We've got a good team on the content side and some good stuff happening on content. We talked before about the emotional intelligence course that's coming out as part of a new series on leadership for people that are new to leadership roles. That's starting to come together nicely. And all of the tanker
that
stuff
one's
is
on
really
the,
coming together nicely too.
I think on the emotional intelligence, I think that one is going out the door soon.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's in QA. And then, like you said, the tanker courses. Yeah, we finally got some. Berenice is also, besides being a photographer, she's also does some great 3D work. And so she's been doing that and working on sloshing, sloshing inside a tanker, which I think is very cool.
Yeah, the animation of the liquids moving around in tankers is challenging, but looking really good now that it's come together. Yes. So one of the other things that I wanted to mention, I meant to mention it when we were talking about the big road trip, but we have to give a shout out to a couple of people that we caught up with in Winnipeg on Friday. Longtime partner, Bert Weeb and his wife, Nancy, who have been reseller partners of ours for a long time when they worked at Marsh. Out of the Winnipeg office, and now, well, then they moved over to BFL, and they are fantastic risk consultants and compliance consultants who keep retiring and then going back, then retiring, then going back. So it was
so really unusual for trucking.
I know.
That never happens.
It's exactly how most safety people work. They retire, in quotes, and then 6 months later, they're working for somebody else, or they're consulting, or they're just doing their own kind of freelance thing. But yeah, it was really nice to catch up with them and see how they're doing. So shout out to Bert and Nancy, who do listen to this podcast periodically. So
yes, it was great to see you guys. And yes. I can't believe we never took a picture.
Cannot believe we never, geniuses we are.
Know, and it didn't occur to me until the next day. I'm like, oh my god, we didn't get a picture. We were sitting there for like 2 hours in this restaurant, and an hour before that.
Yeah.
So that was
one of us thought of taking a picture.
Nope, we're four, all just
four winners right there. Yeah.
Yeah.
So. And also something came up that's somewhat different from that, the piece that you were featured in, an industry news article that you were featured in that I wanted to explore a little bit further. This was in Transport Topics last week, and a discussion about AI in the trucking industry, artificial intelligence. And so Joe Dysart writes for Transport Topics and has been doing a bunch of stories about AI and where it's going to and exploring how it might be applied in different places. And this one was a story about how fleets can use AI to talk to their databases and get more information, and something like that was sort of the initial premise. And you had some really interesting ideas about it, some thoughts about it. And I wanted to explore those a little bit because I thought it was a very cool premise. Sort of, I think what he was really trying to get at is how can you make better use of the data that you have? How can you apply that intelligence to all of the data that exists within the fleet? And your side of it was a really nice set of things to keep in mind, because it's everybody thinks, oh, AI is going to solve all our problems. It's going to be so fantastic. And your side of it was like, well, you got to watch for this and be careful of that and to make sure you don't have all of these problems that can come up. So I thought it was really cool. And I wanted to just talk about that a little bit. So the idea was using AI to, find things in the database, find things in the information that people aren't able to see now. So there are some considerations or things to be, I wouldn't say concerned about, but things to watch for when you are thinking about doing that. And so one of the things that I thought was interesting that you pointed out was a permissions thing, is figuring out who's actually able to interact with the AI. But that also goes into who's involved in training the AI and teaching it to sort of parse this data, and how are they doing it? How are they making sure they don't have any biases in that? So, you know, what were you thinking about when you were talking about that, or where were your thoughts around, how to be careful around those things?
So when he first approached me about this, I was like, well, I don't do anything with AI, so I don't know if I can say anything. But then when I started reading the questions that he was asking, I was like, oh, wait, no, I do have some opinions on this. One of the things that I think is really important is that AI doesn't think of, it's like a toaster, right? Well, I know it's not like a toaster, but the thing is when you don't know what you want to know, like if you don't know the questions to ask and you don't know who should be asking the questions or when should data be mined and what kind of trends are you looking for? And are those really the right trends that, like, is that really the right information? If you're not doing that now, then artificial intelligence is not going to give you any better information than you have now. Is that you have to know what it is that you're asking for, or you have to know what direction you want to go in. It can't just be, you know, what are the three top customers? And you already probably already know that. So what is AI going to tell you? What is it that you want to ask it? And I don't think people are using the data that they have now. So for example, if you look at cameras, all of that information that's coming in from a camera, I don't think most companies are using that data to its maximum potential. I think they're probably like going between 40 and 70% because they don't really know that technology yet. And they don't know how much that they can get from it. So they don't know which bits mean what. And it's the same thing with AI, is that you can ask a computer a question, but you're only going to get the answer that you ask for, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And it's a really good observation, because people have this idea that AI is going to magically solve problems, or it's magically going to destroy society.
One of the two.
But even when it's going to magically solve all the problems, people are approaching it like they're going to go to this AI. Well, first of all, they're going to install an AI and it's going to look at their data, and then they're going to say, okay, give me the massive insight that I'm missing that will help me transform my business. And the AI is not going to have any clue.
The AI is going to be, does not compute.
Yeah, it's not going to have a sense of anything. So even if you look at ChatGPT, which everybody's freaking out about now, it really is just doing a search. You ask it a question, it does a search, it goes and finds some information, and it's good at doing a natural language write-up of that information, or turning that into something that is a very basic style of writing. But it's not finding insights that are hidden right now. And even when these things get much more deeply trained, they're only going to find the insights that people ask for. They're only going to look in the places that people tell them to look. So yeah, if you go and you start, telling your AI, give us the most profitable customers, tell us where the customers are that are the biggest problem for us, or something like that. First of all, it needs an insane amount of data in order to actually get trained. Then secondly, it's going to take the basic information to the next level, but it's not going to say, here are the problem customers, and here's what to do about them. It's only going to do what you tell it to do. And yeah, it will make connections that are not obvious, but it's not going to immediately fix everything in the business. And I keep thinking about it in the context of dash cams. You mentioned that cameras and the things that people have, all the data they're collecting now. And we partner with a bunch of camera companies that have the foundation of really good technology, but every one of these things is loaded with false positives. So if we look at how customers are using the dash cam integration that we built, and we have it set up so that you can set up a rule, and when there's a certain number of camera events, it triggers a certain intervention. And it might be a training assignment or something like that. And my thinking was that you'll say, okay, if you have one hard break a week, then we're going to have you read the policy about following too close. If you have three hard breaks in a week, we're going to tell you that you need to take a course on speed and space management. That was sort of what my thinking was about how people would set up. But now in the real world, we're seeing people are actually setting up, and it's nothing like that at all. It's not one hard break is this and three hard breaks is that. It's 20 hard breaks is this and 100 hard breaks is that. And I was like, oh my God, like, you really have that many hard breaks that you're letting people go through stuff? Having 100 hard breaks in a month, that's crazy. But the reality is there's so many false positives that that's the numbers that they have to work with. Because of those 100 hard breaks that are tagged, there really were only 15 real hard breaks. So, and this is the better systems. They're all loaded with false positives. So even though they're AI dash cams, there's not really that much intelligence in there yet. It needs a lot more, needs a lot more training in order to be usable.
And that comes to the question of who's going to train it.
Yeah.
Like, who do people, are those people even in a trucking company, or are they going to be the vendors? And when you train it, is it going to give you the information that you actually need? And who's going to be allowed to access that information? Is that going to be something that anyone can do, or, can you do it? What about when you have exclusive data for a certain person, but if there are other people in the room? So if you're in a bullpen, and the AI is giving you all kinds of information, do you want everybody who's passing by to hear it? Are you, like, what rules are going to be around that? Who's going to access it? So you think of that guy who just got arrested in the US and got into a lot of trouble for sharing
military secrets.
Thank you. Of secrets on Discord. Well, you know, if you have artificial intelligence, then who's the gatekeeper to that intelligence? Because you don't want that information going, you know, to who knows where. And so who has access? Who can talk to it? It's like, how is that going to happen? There's a lot of procedural things, I think. AI by itself is really interesting, but all of the unintended consequences are what people aren't thinking about. They're just thinking about, or they think about it very simplistically. They're like, okay, it's going to be Chat GPT or something like that. It's just going to tell me all I need to know, and I won't need to use this person and this person and this person. It'll just take over their jobs or whatever. Mm-hmm. But in reality, what happens is that you're going to have a whole new set of problems that need to be solved. And so jumping in with both feet into something like this is not necessarily the answer. What you need to do is do it a little bit at a time and see where the problems are, and then kind of try and fix your processes to match. I think that a lot of problems have come out of the jump into technology that a lot of trucking companies have done, where, you know, you're like cameras, not so much because people are paying a lot of attention to cameras, but just, oh, let's put every single system that I need to use into one dashboard. You know, I can only use one dashboard and I need all the technology to be all together, but that doesn't always work that way. It doesn't, like, down the road, you have problems because things don't talk to each other properly or they don't update properly and that kind of thing. So there's always, I can't remember what else I said in there, but unintended consequences.
It's a really interesting point that tech is doing what tech always does, which is jump all over the flavor of the week. Mm-hmm. And the flavor of the week right now is AI, and everybody's talking about how we're finally there and AI is going to solve our problems. No, it's not. They're going to make as many new problems as you solve.
Yes.
It's going to be just as much of a chaotic mess as Uber and Airbnb and all of these other quote unquote disruptive technologies that just make a mess of society.
One of the things that and this kind of comes up with electric cars as well, because, you know, we started getting electric cars when hybrids first came out. So that was like 15 years ago was our first hybrid. And
actually it was 20 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
When we moved into the house that we just sold.
Yeah.
We had that's when we got our hybrid.
Same summer that we bought the first hybrid. Yeah.
But when we first got that hybrid, and that was so weird, and people would ask us, you know, oh, you know, what is your mileage? And, you know, how much less do you have to pay for gas? And we didn't know because we weren't really paying attention to it. We just wanted the technology. And it did help. To a certain degree. And now there's tons of electric, and we got the full, you know, we got a Tesla and that was really cool. And there weren't that many of them, but now there's getting to be a lot of electric vehicles. So what happens when everybody has an electric vehicle? Well, those chargers that were all empty when we went there are all going to be full. So how long do you have to wait for a Tesla? Or are you going to have, how much is it going to cost to charge your car? It's not going to be $30 anymore. I guarantee you in 5 years, it will not be $30. They will be raising those prices because too many people, or it will be in the urban areas. It's going to be more expensive, or it's going to be more expensive in the rural areas because it's harder to get electricity up there. So it's going to start to change when everybody's doing the same thing. So it's the same thing with ELDs. And I always go back to ELDs as an example of what happens when everybody does it at the same time. Then things start to be problematic. All of a sudden you realize what this ELD, like there's 50,000 ELD devices on the market, but now you're starting to realize which ones are bad and which ones are good. And so people are starting to switch things around because now they're getting better data because there's more of it. It's going to be the same thing with cameras. I'm going to give it, you know, another 5 years and people will figure out how to use cameras and they will be able to integrate camera data so much better into their whole safety program because there will be, like, everybody will sort of figure it out. Like it will not be the new bright, shiny object anymore. It will be kind of okay, this is what you use it for, and this is how you, we don't know how to use all this tech yet. How we used an electric car 15 years ago is different than how we use it now. We have, you know, we got in a charger installed in our garage, which was like crazy 20 years ago. You wouldn't have thought that. People were thinking of that as like the Jetsons. And so if you think about what it's going to be, what you, if you can think of the like the logical consequences of what happens when everybody is using a certain technology, then you can start to plan for how you can use it more intelligently.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, the tech industry is like genetically incapable of considering slow growth and a purposeful adoption and implementation of things. Like they just all they can do is freak out and, oh God, we got to do a land grab and get everybody on, grab all the customers we can immediately. Got to transform everybody, and it's always a bloody mess. It is always a bloody mess.
And what happens is you end up with the customers having to figure out how to regulate all of these tech companies saying, oh, you want this, want this, want this, want this, want this, because that's what they do. They just want to sell you something that's bright and shiny, and it's absolutely not usually useful.
Well, it's something that I struggle with, because our philosophy is very different. Our philosophy is grow at a more measured pace and take the time to figure out things and make the right decisions and see how people are using it and see what needs to be changed and then change it and then grow steadily from there, rather than just let's get everybody on board immediately and then we'll deal with it from there, which a lot of our peers are all about. Get all the customers on board now, then figure out the problems later. Well, then they end up with systems that are crashing all the time because they can't handle the load, or they have all of these unintended consequences that come up from all of these changes coming up so quickly. So this, it's the same thing that's happening now with these AI dash cams and all of these other all of this other freight tech that, yes, for all those listening, we are both sneering when we say tech.
But anything that has tech at the end of it, it's gross.
Yeah. Yeah.
But ed tech. We're technically ed tech.
We're ed tech and freight tech. Yes.
Yes. And freight. Fred Aid. No, I can't even say it.
But all of these companies that are just focused on solving one particular problem without taking the time to consider all of the knock-on consequences, those are people are ending up causing lots of problems. And that's why we're starting to see, certainly we've seen a shakeout in the ELD industry, because there's so many people that came in with a latest and greatest ELD that really wasn't field tested and didn't work very well, and they didn't have any clue what they were doing with it. I've started to see some of that in the camera world, where people have got these things that are purported to be these fantastic systems, but they're all based on the assumption that you've got a 5G connection and you're in Silicon Valley somewhere. Yeah, they don't work so great when you're going across Wyoming and there's no connectivity, or you're going across that stretch of Utah where there's nothing for 150 miles, you know, and we saw that even in our drive. We're going across the Trans-Canada Highway. There's large sections where we had no bars. There was no service. Well, you've got to have a system that still works in that situation. And so many of these freight tech products are not designed for that at all. So,
well, interesting, when you take the example of our car is very intelligent. So we can find out where we have to charge. It'll calculate all the distance. We have we have full Google Maps all like right in the car. But if you are driving on curves, curves in Northern Ontario, it can't tell the difference between someone coming on head on and you just going into a curve where
just
somebody else
somebody.
Is, passing someone. So we would have, so when I was driving, I wouldn't have it on full cruise, like full auto steer. And I was fine. If you don't have it on full, like where you don't have to have your hands on the wheel and the car will just do it for you. We do have that. But on the curves, I was also slowing down. I didn't want to be on cruise control because I've written too many defensive driver courses. And I know that this is, cruise control can be your friend and it could also be your enemy. So I was taking it off cruise. And so this didn't happen to me, but Mark didn't. Mark was going around the corner at.
I didn't have full auto steer on. I just had the speed, auto speed. So basically,
maybe it was just okay. But it thought that it kept braking. The car kept braking so hard because it thought that these trucks were coming.
It thought
right
that we
into
were
us.
About to plow into a truck that was going by us. not recognizing that both of us were on a curve and we were just within our lanes and passing each other. But yeah, I think like you surmised, it was a combination of the position of the sun and the reflections and where things were at and just the particular angles, and it would freak out. There was probably four different times that it freaked out and did this emergency braking and starts pinging and screaming at us, and then for a half a second, and then it realizes it's not a problem and then it goes back to normal, and then it immediately wants to speed back up to the set speed. So it was really unpleasant when you're
well, and it's also good that it's also good that there wasn't somebody right behind us, because
yeah,
it's a hard break that it does when it freaks out. Oh, so wow. It's not all joy and roses and things like that.
but the
it's
point also, being, it's, these it's systems not, need a lot of time to get matured before you can really take full advantage
finished.
Of them. Yeah,
exactly. It's not finished. And if you start thinking, oh, hey, I can just take my hands off the wheel and the car will drive itself, you're in for some unpleasantness, because the car cannot really drive itself. It kind of can. If we were in Saskatchewan on a straight flat road, it has no problem. But if you are in the winter and you're on a curve and things are coming at you and it doesn't like it, it doesn't.
Now, we will get there. The car is getting better. Every time it does that, it learns a bit. So it's getting better, but it's going to be a while. And I think coming back to the whole ChatGPT thing, I think what this tells us is that the next year or 2 years is going to be full of people getting super excited about something to do with AI and then discovering that it's actually a mess, or that there's a bunch of unintended consequences or causes like some other major problem that nobody's really considered. So we're going to have a whole lot of these kind of false starts and I guess unjustified excitement about something that really isn't ready for prime time yet.
But you know what? I think that experimenting with it, absolutely. I think that it would be really cool to be able to ask your database about, you know, some sort of stats. I know that in the Best Fleets database, I would love to be able to just sort of ask it a question about, you know, what are the trends for, I don't know, something really simple, like what are the trends for driver pay? Is it really going up, or, you know, is it owner operators only, or, you know, what's the difference between this and this, if we have the data?
Well, that's a great question and a great example of why you need to spend a lot of time figuring out what your actual question is, because we can do that. We can look in our database and see what are the trends on driver pay and look at what the numbers are going to be. And what we're going to find is, oh, we've actually got to account for this in a slightly different way, or, oh, we've got to consider this as well. Then you go back and you refine the question and you ask it again. And then you get another set of data back and you look at it, go, oh yeah, but that really doesn't get what we want still. There's some other thing that we need to put in there. And you keep going through this cycle of looking at the answers and saying, well, it's not really what I want. So then you refine it and you end up, by the time you get the data you want, you've got this very refined and very precise set of questions and criteria that you've established. And AI is basically the same thing. Training the AI is just refining all of those specific questions so that it actually gives you the answer that's useful to you.
Yeah, but then I don't have to get reports, and I don't have to, like, I can just get that data. Now, that was one of the things that I was thinking about, is how do you back up your data? Because when you do it manually, or you get a report, you have that report and there's the data. Is that what AI is going to do? Is it going to generate a report? Are you going to be able to track what people asked and see the history of what those questions were and what the data was that the AI gave back? Because how do we know? Because ChatGPT is not necessarily true. Like, the stuff that it's outputting, it depends on what has been asked of it. Yeah. So it doesn't care about lying or the truth or facts versus, you know, fiction or whatever it is. It just does what it's asking. So what happens with the data? Like, how do you know, how do you verify that data is true? It's kind of like,
that's one of the things that I always find interesting when people say, oh, how did it come up with this? How did it get to this spot, this particular answer, or this solution to a problem? And the AI researchers always say, we don't know. It's a black box. You never know how it got there. And why would I trust something where I don't know how it got to that answer?
Exactly. And that's kind of where I am. I don't think I want to use AI that I can't, you know, where it doesn't show its work. Yeah. We want to see the work. I always know the work that backs up what my stats are. When I say, this percentage of drivers is blah, 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 I have that data. I can point to it and say, and you can go back through what my steps and you can see the same results. Mm-hmm. I want to know that something that's being generated by AI has that same backtracking, because otherwise, who knows what we're putting out in the world and what kind of information we're acting on and what kind of consequences are going to come from that. So, if AI starts telling you that, you don't need, or that a certain driving action is safe when it's not, then how do you tell a driver, like if a driver is saying, well, the AI is telling me it's okay, and you know it's not. Mm-hmm. So is it, when do you, like, how do you make the AI comply with your standards as well? Because the AI is going to teach itself certain things. And how do you control that? And that's kind of what the problem is with AI in general right now, that some people are kind of sounding the alarm that, if it may go off track and you mm-hmm. don't know when that, what's going to happen when that happens. And some very smart people are saying that, you have to be really careful. Mm-hmm. It's not, just because it's tech doesn't mean it's true.
Yeah. Just because it's a tech company that has a mountain of funding doesn't mean they actually know what they're doing. And when their answer is, oh, hey, it's the black box, you just got to trust it. No.
Is that what you want? Yeah. On your, like, moving down the road?
Yeah. Like, is that what you want
in an LCV?
Yeah, with your 80,000 pounds of freight?
I don't think so. So even though, and I will say, in sort of the last point, I think, is that the file server software that we use, it's software as a service. It's like Dropbox, but it's called Box. And if you've been in Best Fleets, you've gotten Box links from us. Box link apparently has AI. And it is going to allow you to get data from your users and things like that. There's a whole admin function, and you can get reports on like what user is doing what. And so I want to try it out. I want to see what that AI does and whether I think it's accurate. And
I want to play with it. I think they added it in because every Silicon Valley company has got to talk about how they're doing something with AI. And if they're public, they have to say it so their stock doesn't crash. And if they're not public yet, it gives them runway to do another fundraising round. It is a complete scam. It's like crypto at this point.
I am going to play with it. A little bit.
Yeah, I think you play with it and see what happens.
But
be very careful. Yeah.
I'm going to. Are you kidding me? I'm not.
No, everybody should be very careful with all of these things.
Do not make decisions based on this yet.
Yes.
And if someone tells you it's going to solve all your problems, then, thank them kindly and then, end the conversation.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And with that, I think we are coming to the end of our episode here. So the summary of all of this is that AI is interesting and will be excellent in the future. But for now, be very careful with it.
And crossing the country by Tesla is not only possible, but it's very interesting.
Yes. In our next episode, we will have the second half of the journey. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody.
Have a great day.